Chapter 17. Tuesday.
The mandatory hermit requirements for estates larger than 80 acres was one of the many inverse consequences directives undertaken by the Common Sense Party. The theory was not sound, but that was the point. Bearing in mind that well-meant ideas often had negative unforeseen consequences, it was argued that daft, pointless, or downright bizarre ideas might have unforeseen positive outcomes, hence mandatory hermits. Aside from the weekly gruel allowance and the construction of a damp cave, it cost little. The Common Sense Party Inverse Consequence Directive explained. Tuesday was already back home when we got there, at a little after 1:30. She and the Winko were in the far paddock, with a quarter-size mock-up of the anti-smite field generator. The Winko was readying the high-speed camera, and standing around were assorted observers and representatives of various interested parties. Landon and I exchanged new passwords, and while he made a sandwich, I took the golf buggy down to see how things were going. The far paddock was the place usually reserved for Tuesday's tests, partly because it was a good distance from the house, but mostly because there was a useful screen of mature Leylandii to absorb blast damage. "I thought I told you to go to school this morning," I said, making sure we were out of earshot of the small crowd. I did go to school. I went into math class and proved that there actually is a highest number, and then I helped Derek in the chemistry lab to make a new type of quick-setting PVC substitute from potato starch and an enzyme readily grown on onions. During the break, I figured that Janice Lovegrove was up the duff, and probably by Scooter Davis, that Debbie Trubshaw is now putting it about in a big way, and that Sian Johnson's new hairstyle was pinched from page 9 of the Swindon edition of Vogue. "Anything regarding Gavin Watkins?" I asked, considering that Friday was destined to murder him on Friday, and had yet to have a motive. "He didn't offer me any money to see my boobs again."
"That's good."
"No. He said he'd give me £5 for sex."
"He did what?"
I yelled, outraged.
"You said no, right? I'm going to report him to the headmaster."
"Mom!" "Of course I said no. Please don't do that," she implored. "I'm already a geek and a teacher's pet and a brainiac and smart aleck. I don't want to be a snitch as well. Besides, I punched him in the eye."
"You did?"
"Yes, quite hard. I may even have detached his retina. I left school after that and got back in time to do a test of the defense shield for this bunch of suits."
"Well, okay," I said, looking over her shoulder to where they were all milling about.
"Who are they, anyway?" "The guys in the raincoats are from the Ministry of Theistic Defence, and the two in tweeds are from Tobin and Scott, the anti-smite tower-building contractors. The guy in the lab coat is from Health and Safety, and the three on the left are from the Swindon City Council." I noted that one of the women in the last group was Bunty Fairweather. I needed to talk to her about alternative plans for Swindon if the shield didn't work, but this, I noted, was probably not the time.
"Leave you to it, then?"
But I didn't leave completely. To watch the test, I stopped the golf cart above the long steps, where the landscaped water cascade tumbled into the lake, one of the many garden features within the 88-acre estate.
"Every journey begins with the first step," came a deep voice tinged with wisdom and august pronouncements.
"Hello, Millen," I said, greeting our ornamental hermit with a friendly nod. "How's the hermitage?"
"Drafty," he said simply. "But the discomfort of one man is mere sand upon the beach to the iniquities undertaken by the few to many."
"You won't want central heating put in, then?"
"Comfort is the measles of modern man," he said in a half-hearted manner, "and only through cheerless discomfort will the mind be cleared and unfettered."
I smiled. My ex-stalker and biographer Millen de Flos had recently volunteered to be our ornamental hermit, part of the Common Sense Party's Inverse Consequences Directive. If we were going to have someone living on the estate who was to wander around aimlessly spouting quasi-philosophical nonsense, we far preferred it to be someone we knew.
"When's the hermit exam?" I asked.
"Next week," he said nervously, How am I sounding?
I'll be honest, not great.
Really?
I'm afraid so.
Damn. I was hoping 6 months of silent contemplation would suddenly imbue me with a sage-like intelligence, but all I seem to be able to manage is a strange fungal growth on my shins caused by the damp, and lukewarm aphorisms that would scarcely do good favour to the back of a matchbox.
I don't really get the whole intellect through isolation thing, I said. I'm not sure anyone can claim to understand the human condition until he's talked two people out of a fight, smoothed over a best friend's marital breakup, or dealt effectively with a teenager's huffy silence.
I'd include an appreciation of Tex Avery cartoons in that list, added Millen sadly, along with Gaudi, David Lean's later movies, and a minimum of one evening with Emo Phillips. But the hermit elders are traditionalists. The City and Guild's higher hermiting certificate is based mostly around Horace, the Old Testament, Descartes, and Marx.
Groucho or Karl?
Harpo. I think it reflects the silent aspect.
Ah, couldn't you just smear yourself with mud and excrement and mumble Latin to yourself in a corner?
What, now?
No, during the exam. Millen shook his head.
Everyone's tried that old chestnut. Instant disqualification.
He nodded toward the far paddock.
What's Tuesday up to?
Another anti-smite shield test.
Will this one work?
Hope springs eternal. We watched as the observers were shepherded into the concrete viewing bunker, while Tuesday made some trifling adjustments to the defence shield. It was identical to the full-size versions dotted around the country, a large copper-domed head like a mushroom atop a lattice tower. Above the test rig was the smite simulator, a single electrode 20 feet higher than the copper dome, suspended from three towers. This was charged to several trillion volts, and would discharge on cue in an attempt to simulate the sort of high-power ground burst that was the Almighty's favoured attempt at cleansing. As we watched, Tuesday walked to the concrete bunker herself, and a few moments later the domed copper hat of the shield began to rotate slowly. It moved faster and faster until small crackles of electricity started to fire off around the edges, and a bluish field began to form in a soft, undulating canopy that reached beyond the tower and to the ground like a large umbrella. "Fingers in ears," I said, and a second or two later a blue flash of lightning descended from the simulator, followed a millisecond later by a loud crack. For a moment I thought the shield had held. But then the spinning copper dome disintegrated into thousands of fragments, some of which were thrown hundreds of feet in the air. Millen and I ducked behind the golf buggy as the worthless shrapnel fell to the ground around us. "She'll be disappointed," I said.
"Always expect a kick in the teeth," said Millen, "so that when you get a slap in the chops, it seems like a triumph."
"Listen," I said, "what do you know about a Goliath employee named Jacob Krantz?" Before his days as a hermit, Millen de Flos had been editor of Conspiracy Theorist magazine, a position that necessitated he keep a somewhat lower profile these days, as some of his wackier exclusives had turned out to be far truer than expected, much to the displeasure of Goliath, which was implicated in almost every conspiracy you cared to invent.
"Krantz," said Millen. "Doesn't ring a bell. Does he have a ladder number?"
"It's 673.
Wow.
"Wow, indeed. He might be working in the synthetic human division."
"According to Goliath, there is no synthetic human division. Let me make a few calls."
He disappeared back into his hermitage, and I watched as the observers trailed out of the bunker to stare sadly at the remains of the defence shield. They had all been driven away by the time I got down there, and I found Tuesday in the bunker trying to make sense of the vast amount of telemetry generated by the test. "I'm sorry, sweet pea," I said. "It must be a huge disappointment." She turned to glower at me. "If you hadn't sent me to school this morning to prove I was a real teenager, then I might have made this bloody thing work."
"Really?"
"No, not really. This is me being angry and you being gullible and sensitive when reacting negatively to my wild accusations." Tuesday could be very direct when angry, but also quite honest. I can think of three things at once, so school isn't usually a problem, she said as she calmed. I've just got to fine-tune the algorithm to better predict the Made-Upian field. Do it right, and we have over 20 gigawatts of free energy and a vexed deity. Get it wrong, and we've got 7 tons of the most expensive scrap on record. Will you be able to get it finished by Friday? I asked. I'm not keen to see Swindon's downtown disappear in a flash of blue wrath. I'll figure it out, Mum, she said with a sigh. You should have seen their faces. That mock-up cost them 60 million to build, and it's the 10th I've destroyed. So you're sure you're okay? I asked, as a distinctive thup-thup-thup sound heralded the arrival of a tiltrotor aircraft. I'll be fine, said Tuesday, as the small craft appeared above the tree line and folded its rotor panels to landing configuration. That'll be my ride. Where are you going? The Sisterhood is opening their library for scrutiny. Oh, said Tuesday. If you see a copy of Archimedes' 5th issue of Practical Mechanical Theorems, the one where he outlines how to build a tumble dryer, I'd love a copy.